very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King, 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 king now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again when I return.
Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
I am
super girl.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria Podcast. My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And with me as always is
Catfish. You can me up at CJGman67.
Okay, good.
Whew.
Catfish, we've survived 10 long weeks of heart stopping, stomach stopping, bowel stopping, Game of Thrones action of season 6.
And just the fact that we actually survived it puts us in the minority.
Right. Unlike many members of House Tyrell, we survived season 6. We're going to be going through all the feedback we've gotten from you guys.
Right.
After that most crazy of season finales. Oof. That we just had, The Winds of Winter. Plus, we're going to be answering some questions that have come up that we've had time to think about, since we normally record our review and recap as soon as the episode airs. So we're going to have some thoughts to give on kind of deeper mysteries and deeper things that have happened.
Ooh.
Plus, we're going to be giving away another prize.
Yes, we do. We had gathered so many prizes that some of them got tucked away in odd corners.
That's
and
right.
So sometime during this Periscope/podcast, we will be giving away an official HBO, the weekly show with John Oliver. He will be giving away the cap that they produced, Make Donald Trump Again. This is official. It's made in America, unlike all of Donald Trump's clothes, hats, and wives.
Okay. Now, all right, we're off to an offensive start here on the Joffria Podcast.
I thought that was brilliant. I just came up with that. It's absolutely true.
It definitely sounded like you didn't put any thought into it. That's correct. So I do want to point out once again that we will be starting up other podcasts. We're going to review that crazy vampire apocalypse show, The Strain.
Ooh.
On our podcast entitled Got Ooh. Your Milk, if you're at all interested. That's going to start up at the end of August. So go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, subscribe to the Got Your Milk podcast. Plus, we're going to be doing a lot of one-off podcasts on some topics that you guys pitch to us. Go to iTunes, subscribe to a podcast entitled Double P Podcast Network. That's Double P Podcast Network. And we're going to be going over kind of topics that you guys give us as addition to things, media that we think you guys might be interested in. And in fact, our feedback show, Catfish, is going to begin with some great feedback we got on Facebook from Ryan. What did Ryan say, Catfish?
Ryan said, I intend to check out your other podcasts, but please consider one for either Netflix's Marco Polo from July or History Channel's Vikings. Thanks.
Ryan, thank you so much for the suggestion. I've been watching Vikings since the very beginning. I thought that first couple of seasons were really great. Have you seen it?
I watched the entire first season, and then when it came around again for the second season, I was automatically recording it, and I just didn't have enough interest in
continuing. I think it's pretty strong. I think these later episodes, as with a typical TV show, these later episodes have kind of dropped off a bit, even though this most recent season, I think, was one of their better seasons they've had. So maybe we could just do kind of a recap of what we thought of the first season or something. But also, I have not seen Marco Polo. Have you heard? I've heard okay things about it. What have you heard about
Marco? I haven't heard anything about Marco Polo. I'd love to do Marco Polo if there's lots of adventure and good costumes and also pepper. You know, it's too bad we didn't do Narcos either. Did you watch that series on Netflix?
I heard that featured Pedro Pascal, a.k.a. Oberyn Martell, the Red Viper from Game of Thrones. He has a part.
Yes, he is in it. He's great.
Guys, if you want to pitch out suggestions, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/doublepodcast, plural. That's facebook.com, the word double, the single letter P, and the word podcast, plural, and pitch them, because we really, in this kind of 2-month period where we won't be doing any weekly podcasts, we'd love to keep blathering on.
Sure, why not? Pitch us something and we'll check it out. You know, another one that you didn't mention that I actually loved was our Ash versus the Evil Dead podcast. So if you guys are kind of, you know, I know it came out recently on DVD. If you are just picked that up in DVD or you're catching up on it, you can go and check that out. That's under the name which we never changed it, correct?
No, I think it's Ash versus Evil Dead versus Bubba versus Catfish. I believe if you go to iTunes, go to Stitcher and search Ash versus Evil Dead versus Bubba versus catfish. It's right there. You can.
that's an easy search.
Yes, that's true. It's going to narrow it down. So, catfish, are you ready? Let's jump into some of the feedback. And a lot of people, because the Winds of Winter started in King's Landing and went and stayed in King's Landing for a good 20 minutes, a lot of people had some thoughts on that. And so why don't we go find out what our double L's.
Double L's?
Well, that's what I like to call our loyal listeners.
Oh, I never heard that before.
I'm rolling it out. Now that season six is over, I thought we needed a new term. So let's see what some of our double L's are saying.
What? Double L's?
Loyal.
Oh, you just said it. I'm sorry. It's so new. It's not stuck in my head yet.
Kind of like Queen Cersei on the Iron Throne. It's going to take a while for us to get used to it. So what do we hear, Catfish?
Lil Andy or Jenny says, King really nailed that landing.
Oh, that is...
Hashtag bye-bye usurper Tommen.
Oh, man.
Yes.
That sounds like somebody's making fun of poor usurper King Tommen, who I felt really hit rock bottom.
Well, it's been a tough show for him, but I really feel like he reached his lowest point.
He did.
On
quickly.
Sunday.
He reached it quickly. Now, Catfish, one thing you've been saying about usurper brother King Tommen,
right,
is that whoever talks to him last is who he kind of believes and who he goes
exactly
with. And so our good friend Jesse on Twitter, who's at Mr. Jesse Jordan, he kind of had his own thought about who talked to Tommen last. He said he believes it was Sir Frank and Gregor who was in the room with him, or outside the room making sure Tommen didn't leave. He said he believes Sir Frank and Gregor told Tommen to jump. And so that was the last thing he heard. So Tommen did jump to his death. Ouch.
Look, that's pretty smart, but yeah. I've got to give it to you. Mm-hmm. I think you were the most right. The person that was in the room with Tommen was actually Joffrey. And that's why they became your Joffrey of the Year, because it was actually Joffrey. I thought that was a brilliant reading of that scene and a nice introduction. It's going to mix it up. People think, oh my goodness, Cersei, are they going to have a conflict with Jaime? What's going on? People are going to be very surprised when we start the next season and Joffrey just back on the throne.
Right. A lot of people wonder who should take down a mother. It always should be a son. And so just like in life. Just like where in life mothers get put in nursing homes by sons, in this case, Joffrey will reclaim his crown.
Okay, good. That's a good point.
Love you, Mom. All right, so we got some other feedback about King's Landing. Catfish, what do you think?
Tariq at Tariq Latif 42 says, if only Cersei hadn't had Frank and Gregor stop Tommen going to the Sept, would have saved Qyburn a job burning and burying the ashes there.
Now, wait
a
minute.
That is a good point.
Hey, no.
Gosh, all that trouble to take him all the way back, and then you just got to bring him back over again.
You know, you often thought Tommen was swept up in the politics of King's Landing, and now he's literally going to be swept up.
Oh, man.
Just not nice to poor Tommen. But people continued not being nice to Tommen. That's what half our feedback was, Catfish. Sarvesh on Twitter, he says, King Joffrey wouldn't have jumped out the window. He would have asked for more wildfire.
Bam.
Ouch.
Bam. Now, our old buddy Jack at BTMac11,
yeah,
who is all the time saying stuff that makes me laugh my butt off,
yeah,
said, who had money on Pycelle and Gregor getting some ass in the finale?
Oh. That is true. You worry about that Sir Gregor got more. Sir Gregor might have bits of flesh ripped off. I mean, what happened to Septa Eunella? I said this on the recap and review podcast, but we wanted her to suffer, but I don't think anybody should suffer like this. That was hideous. What we can only imagine is happening to
her.
That's not right.
Thankfully, we can imagine different things. You can imagine stuff that we've actually seen on the show, and I can just imagine that it was just unpleasant. And then without any details.
Okay, that's pretty good.
So thankfully, thank God, maybe they learned their lesson after they've gotten so much criticism about horrible, nasty rapes. Let's just leave this to people's imagination.
Close the door. Hodor held the door. Cersei closed the door. So we didn't have to see that. Just what we could only imagine is terrible.
Of course, the question people don't ask is,
yeah,
who enjoyed it less?
Oh, okay, we've got to stop giggling.
Let's move on.
This is awkward laughter. We apologize, listeners. You know, a lot of people were upset, and somebody, Lisa on Facebook, just wanted to give an RIP to Notorious GMP.
GMP?
Grand Master Paisel.
Oh.
It is so sad.
Uh-huh.
Here is somebody, Grand Master, who really, really, really took his job seriously. And how about this?
I couldn't even keep a straight face.
Right. I want to give a Better Call Call for this, but I'm sure it won't happen. If King's Landing needs a new maester, is there any chance that hotshot rookie maester Samuel Tarly will get assigned there?
You know, one thing we didn't talk about, though, with Grandmaster Paisel that I thought of just now, is that he survived to a very old age.
Yeah.
So even though he kind of comes off as a buffoon,
correct,
you have to assume that he'd had some sort of political smarts to have lasted through the different changing of the guards that he's gone through.
Oh, I think he was very smart. One thing that I've been doing in the time since the season finale ended is I've been trying to think about, you know, Grandmaster Paisel, we don't know what house he came from. You know, we have no idea. His name is Paisel. We don't know what his last name is. We don't know what if he came from a house like Maester Aemon at the Wall, came from House Targaryen. And so I'm thinking, what could Grandmaster Paisel, what would his House Paisel's words be? We do not pay. Is that good or growing feeble?
I like it for free.
Right.
Well, would you like to speculate on, you know, for those people who are only show watchers and not book readers?
Yeah.
Would you want to explain how the Maester system works? In that, is it like kind of sending people to the Wall? Now their house no longer matters. They're sort of stripped, almost as if they're bastards.
That's a great call, Catfish. It is normally, say you have that third, that fourth son who can't inherit your keep, who kind of can't go anywhere. And maybe like Samuel Tarly, he's not fit to be a knight. Many houses would send their, you know, third and fourth sons down to Old Town, the site of the Citadel, and they would train them to be maesters. Now, one of the things is when you become a maester, you're supposed to, just like in the Wall, you're so correct in saying this, you lose your family name. You lose your house name because you're going to be assigned to a castle or a keep, and you're supposed to serve them and the realm. You're not supposed to keep that bias that you have when you go to a place. And unlike the way the show and a bit the book is presenting it, the Wall wouldn't be able to send somebody there and say, hey, Samwell is going to be our new maester. Rather, the Society of Maesters, they assign people to it. So the show and, to be honest, the books are being a bit fast and quick with this and saying, okay, well, we lost Maester Aemon. Now Sam will become this position where if you go by the letter of that has been presented in the books, that can't happen. They would pick the person to go there.
Right, right. I would say it's lucky for Paisel that unlike Samwell, who he was the firstborn child, but they sent him to the Wall, not to become a maester, I guess because he could still have his claim unless he was stripped of his name. Paisel did not go to the Wall. Can you imagine how miserable he'd be at the Wall without any tail up there? Now, mandatory...
I'm going to Molestown for extensive study.
Well, speaking of study...
Yeah?
Mandatory says he's merely staying familiar with anatomy. So he's still doing his training.
Oh, my Lord.
I don't know. Should we find out? If only we could ask that girl. Was he able to find everything correctly?
Now, that whore, that lady of the evening who's with Paisel, she's been on Game of Thrones so much. She actually, her character's name is Mary. So we've seen her an awful lot. And there's an actual, boy, if you really want to go thick in the weeds, there's a great story about this actress who came from the adult film world into an actual, you know, quote unquote, a professional gig on Game of Thrones. And she's very proud of it. And her story is actually very interesting if you're looking for yet something else to read, since we don't have the new book in the off season.
I wonder how many more off seasons it's going to be until we have the next book.
It's a long, long time.
Winter is coming, but the books are not.
Now, somebody was very proud of their predictions, Catfish. Nikki on Facebook, she wrote, my death predictions for season six were mostly correct.
Oh, mostly.
It's just, she says, she grossly underestimated the number of red shirt deaths.
Oh, Star Trek joke. I like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what's interesting is I would have a hard time guessing how many red shirts died in the, what our friends at the History of Westeros are calling the Green Trial. You know, we had the Red Wedding, the Purple Wedding, and they're calling it the Green Trial. How many people would you imagine died in that explosion? In the Sept, there had to be a couple hundred, you would imagine, and then...
Right, but as we talked about before, those weren't the littles. So what's interesting is that not only did she alienate complete other house, but she pretty much wiped out some rich people. The collateral damage was big.
Yeah, if you just happened to be what you like to call a little, a.k.a. the small folk.
That's what I call it. I call them the littles.
They think, you know, we finally made it out of Flea Bottom. We got a little place right next to the Sept. This will be great. This is where we can sell our pigeon pies. What could possibly go? Oh, my God.
What about the guy who was just taking a walk? He was just taking a walk and he hit by a bell. Now, do you think an insurance policy would pay off on that? That's like act of God, right? Getting hit by a bell from the Sept? I think that's a literal act of God.
Right. A lot of people have been saying, isn't it interesting that the shame bell rang in last season finale, and then a different bell killed in this finale?
Now, our old friend at Bertuzzi Punch says he makes a prediction.
Let's hear it.
That Jorah will meet Sam in Old Town.
I've heard that prediction before. If you're going to cure the quote-unquote uncurable disease, wouldn't you go to a place of higher learning, a place where they study anatomy, a different type of studying than Grandmaster Pycelle does?
Delicious.
But the one thing I've been actually thinking about is that if you remember Stannis when he had that sweet, lovable moment with Shireen in season 5, several episodes before he burned her alive, he explained the story that Shireen got grayscale because he had bought this doll, and then she was holding the doll up to her face, and he later found out the doll was infected with grayscale. So if grayscale works like that, Ser Jorah really shouldn't go anywhere. It's almost like anything that rubs up against his arm, and he could possibly infect people. I think we're supposed to imagine that's not true. I wouldn't be surprised if he showed up in Old Town or some other location. What if he went to Braavos and he thought, you know, I'm just going to take in a great play before I die?
Well, let's just say this. Imagine the trouble he would cause if he went to one of Baelish's establishments.
Oh, no. Right. He goes back to Volantis to see the woman of the evening who dresses like Daenerys there. He's like, one last bit of fun before I melt away, before I stone away. Okay, so Catfish, those were a lot of lighthearted comments on King's Landing. So I think we ought to go to maybe the more serious, the more probing questions about King's Landing we got after the Big Bang.
Okay. Well, Mark Studebaker at Studeba says, wonder why they singled Pycelle out to kill. Seemed like he was on his way to the Sept. Book nod? ?
Right. And we do not like to spoil the books, even in a situation where this is something that happened on the show. So, as vaguely as I can, what Mark is referring to is at the very last chapter of the fifth book, the last book to be released, a character in King's Landing is sure enough stabbed to death by these kids. Now, what's interesting is the character who is stabbed to death is not Grandmaster Pycelle, and the person causing the kids to stab this person is not Qyburn. But the show kind of took that scenario, gave Qyburn the murderer's role, and gave Pycelle the death, and adapted some actual lines of dialogue from that chapter. So I do believe it was just a shout-out to book readers, to be completely honest. But perhaps the in-show universe could be is that Pycelle was always talking trash about Qyburn. They stripped his chain. They kicked him out of the Citadel. And so maybe an in-universe explanation is, hey, you've been talking trash about me. I really don't hold you a grudge, but I'm going to have you killed. The end.
Well, yes, except, again, and Qyburn's not a little, but he's sort of a medium. And I believe I called it, I can't remember what episode it was, but Pycelle basically smack-talked to Cersei. And right then I said, he's going down, and he's going down hard. And so this was for challenging Cersei. She was like, well, not everyone's going to be Pycelle. Pycelle needs to get a little special. He needs to be treated a little special.
Catfish, hold on. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you will about the two characters. Picel was a really painful death and probably drawn out all those stab wounds and stuff, where the High Sparrow, who treated Cersei much worse than Picel ever did. Yeah, they're both dead, but the High Sparrow, God bless him, it was just, you know, one and done. He's done. So,
well, true, except that the High Sparrow kind of comes out of nowhere, and Picel was at one time part of her crew. So he sort of backstabbed her. You know what I mean? The High Sparrow's got his own idea of the way the world should work. But Picel flipped on her.
Okay, that's a good call. I would say she kind of flipped on him. If you go back to season two, Tyrion throws Picel in the black cells because he sold her out to Cersei. Cersei demands Picel get freed through Sir Lancel, excuse me. Then Picel is freed, but it was right around that point that she got sick of him. So, Cersei, little fickle is what I'll say.
Now, we've got a great question here.
Let's see.
It's sort of off of King's Landing, but I want to mention it now before I forget it.
Yeah.
It's, again, by Bertuzzi Punch. It says, will Tyrion be mad at the Sand Snakes for killing Myrcella?
Will Tyrion be mad at the Sand Snakes for killing Myrcella? He sure as hell should be, shouldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Should be livid with them.
Wouldn't most of the people in the realm be disgusted with Tyrion, who they believe killed King Joffrey and his father Tywin? We saw that play in Braavos, and they treated evil Uncle Tyrion as the murderer he was. And so there's going to be a lot of, in this alliance that Daenerys has, on Team Daenerys, there's going to be a lot of infighting, to be completely honest.
Right. That is true.
And Jaime, the last time he talked about his brother Tyrion was in season 5. He was talking to Bronn on the ship down to Dorne, and Bronn's like, oh man, Tyrion, I'd love to see him. And Jaime's like, if I ever see him again, I'll kill him because he killed our father.
Well, from their point of view, that seems completely reasonable. Not just the killing of the father, but, you know, the evidence was stacked against Tyrion for the death of Joffrey. So he was justifiably put in jail because of that. And then it's clear without a doubt, we know that he killed his father. And so no matter what, regicide is a kind of a no-no.
Well, what will
in this world?
What will Daenerys do if her hand of the queen, Tyrion, comes up to her and says, the Dornish gave us all these ships. The Dornish are going to give us their army to help fight. Yet, you've got to cut them because they murdered my niece. There's so much inbreeding, if you will, amongst all these families. What would Daenerys do in that case?
That's a good question. I would think that Tyrion, the one thing that we know about Tyrion is, unlike physically, where he doesn't measure up,
right,
mentally he does. And so he would know that you keep an ally close when you need them and then cut them out when you don't. So maybe there will be a little bit payback at the end. But again, we kind of think that the Sand Snakes don't want to make a permanent home at King's Landing. I mean, Dorne is, every time I see Dorne, I'm like, I wish I could live there. Who would want to live in King's Landing, smelly, dirty King's Landing, when you can live in the coast? The winter, the beach breeze is blowing by you every day.
Well, Catfish, let's go even further. Could not the Sand Snakes, and sure enough, Alaria Sand, the woman who actually administered the poison via a kiss to Myrcella, couldn't she say, you know, Tyrion, my lover fought to save you from death?
Oh,
I mean, you'll get off my, you know, step back, sucker.
That's also true. And if he wasn't such a show-off, everything would have been fine. I place the blame of this entirely on the show-off.
Ouch. Well, these are great questions. Keep them coming in. Let's go to one that Sarvesh said on Twitter. Catfish, this one about Margaery. Let's hear it.
Sarvesh says, did Margaery ask Loras to confess to get him to Highgarden, then renounce his vows to the Seven?
We had that great scene, I believe in episode 7. It was in episode 7, where Margaery goes to her grandmother, Lady Olenna, and is like, go home, go home, go home.
Right.
Margaery, I always said she was incredibly smart. I think at a certain point she realized there is no reasoning with these people. We've just got to all get to safety. Margaery couldn't go back to Highgarden herself because her brother is in the cells. But I think no matter what it took, I thought her plan was he'll confess, he'll get a slap on the wrist, and once he's away, once he's just out of the Septa Baylor, we can grab him, we can all head back to Highgarden, we're safe. She freaked out when he got the seven-pointed star carved in his forehead, but she still wanted him out of there, which I think was the right move.
You think she was going to send him to Highgarden? She wasn't going to leave. She was the queen, for God's sakes.
I think she would have left.
She sent her Olenna away because Olenna had two choices. Adopt the faith or be punished. Sorry, and the third choice was the choice she took, which was to leave and smack talk somewhere else. So, I mean, Loras was already in trouble. He was already going to have to confess.
Okay, you've actually made me reconsider Catfish. Maybe she thinks, okay, we've bowed down to the will of the High Sparrow. I am still the queen, and my husband is in the good graces of the High Sparrow. I could stay in King's Landing. That doesn't sound smart, but what can you do?
Right. I mean, as long as she stays on the side of the High Sparrow, she's okay, I guess. I mean, the funny thing is, I thought they were going to follow up on it about that Margaery was not giving it up to Tommen. I thought there was going to be something there, but he mentions it, and it's kind of dropped.
Oh, yeah. It was like, tough luck, suck. All right, so now let's get to this final King's Landing question. We got from Jake Ponser. And it begins with a bit of a Better Call Call from him. He says he thinks that Daenerys and company will overpower King's Landing. Cersei will say, burn them all. Then her brother will kill her. Only two short seasons to go. It's not enough time, Jake doesn't believe, for a full Dany versus Lannister war. So Jaime just ends it. Do you agree with that Better Call Call, Catfish?
Well, if they are going to, and I think they're smart to split this up into two seasons.
Yeah.
We would assume that the first mini season, the end of it, is the fight between Cersei, King's Landing, and the Starks, everybody from the north, combined with the Dornishmen.
Right.
But that fight will be at the end of the next mini season, and then the next season after that will be the fight against the White Walkers, whom we've all have kind of forgotten because they didn't bring them up much.
Oh, it didn't bring them up much. Give me a break. They were in 5 and 6 and had an incredible presence in 5 and 6. That's actually about equal to what they've had in every season.
It should be increasing. We should get an increasing sense of the threat.
So showrunner Catfish is saying that they should have an increasing presence.
That's right.
I understand that thought process, and in many ways I agree with that thought process, but I don't think anybody could forget about them.
My only concern is that the people who have seen them are relatively few, and no one is. People are still thinking about this internecine battle. Nobody in King's Landing knows anything about them. Nobody has really. I mean, I assume that everyone in the North sort of believes Jon, but it's pretty much the Jon and the Wildlings that have seen them. No one else.
Correct.
So I just would have thought there'd be more of a presence.
Well, how about I sell it to you this way, Catfish? Ramsay Bolton, nay Snow, Ramsay was in the very first 4 episodes of season 6. Then he took 4 episodes off. He wasn't seen again until episode 9, The Battle of the Bastards. Did you forget about Ramsay? Nobody forgot about Ramsay. Come on.
No, but everyone knew about Ramsay, and we knew where he was.
Correct.
We knew what he was doing. We're still a little unclear of like, where the White Walkers are, why are they taking so damn long to get somewhere.
Sure.
So we're worried about that. And I'm not the only one who's worried. Our good old buddy at Matthew Papa 2 says, I'm worried next season will be a lot of waiting.
I respectfully disagree, Matt. And Matt, you won a prize. Email me your mailing address so we can mail you this prize to Fitten, FITTEN, at prodigy.net. We want to mail you your prize.
Oh, it was just you and Maester Pycelle on Prodigy. Now it's just you.
You know what? I want to go back to Jake's question, though, about how he feels like there's not enough time, and so Jaime will just kill his sister. That'll be it. So one of the things, and you had mentioned it on the recap and review, Catfish, you're like, Daenerys is too powerful. There's no way she can be stopped. There's no way she could be stopped. So I wanted to use some creative juices and say some creative wildfire.
Okay, great.
And I started thinking, how in the world can Cersei fight this coming force? How can anybody fight them? And two things came to mind.
Okay.
So we have Uncle Euron Greyjoy, who's making his 1,000 ships. One tree at a time. And so I started thinking about it in that you were the one, I believe, or maybe it was our good buddy Mork, who in a recap and review episode said, oh, Daenerys doesn't need somebody riding the other dragons. They'll just follow her and do what she says to do. You know, she rides Drogon, the other two follow, and they see what to do.
Right.
But Daenerys and Drogon can't be everywhere. And so say Daenerys, for example, is attacking... Let's go crazy. Let's say she attacks the Baratheon castle of Storm's End, because that used to be Robert's castle, the person who overthrew her family dynasty. For some reason, she wants to attack that. That means that Euron Greyjoy, on the opposite coast with all his thousands of ships, can do whatever the blank he wants while she's there. He could raid Old Town, for example. He could do a million things. Now, say suddenly she flies and finds him. I think there could easily, as the Dornish proved back when the Targaryens invaded 300 years before the series began, I think there are ways you could battle these dragons. And now let's get specifically to Cersei. Cersei, as we all know, sits on a powder keg of wildfire.
Right.
There is no way that...
A little bit of which destroyed the entirety of Stannis's... Not the entirety.
Right.
There was still some fighting on the beach that, you know, further disfigured Tyrion.
Right, but how in the world, if Tyrion knows that the city has lots of wildfire in it, how could Tyrion allow any of those dragons to go anywhere near King's Landing? Because if they did, they could blow up the whole city. If Daenerys really doesn't just want to be Daenerys the Conqueror, if she doesn't want to blow up all of King's Landing, how is she going to battle Cersei if Cersei's holed up in King's Landing?
Well, that's a good point. First of all, we have to assume that Tyrion is going to say, don't attack King's Landing by sea. We should take these ships and get off of them away from King's Landing.
I like that. Okay, but what's he going to do with the dragons? The dragons almost feel helpless in King's Landing. You can't have, or at least breathing fire, and that's their best asset. You can't have them breathe fire almost anywhere in King's Landing because they could burn down the city she's trying to take.
Oh, that is a great, great point. I mean, that wildfire is... It's a big deal to deal with. I mean, I can't even think about, you know, maybe you say to some of your allies, okay, you guys, we want you to spirit the wildfire out of the city. Now, that's dangerous. I wouldn't want to be moving that stuff myself. You know, someone might be frying up some pot stickers somewhere, and then boom, you go by with the barrel, and it just all blows up.
So if you can't use the dragons against King's Landing, and King's Landing is a walled city, we're supposed to believe, then you've got to have an actual siege. Now, you have the forces to do it. But,
right, and that was my question, because we haven't seen them. We haven't seen a lot of... They haven't had to attack anybody, so we haven't seen the forces that the Lannisters have.
Right.
So we just assume... I just assume they don't have any. Like, there's like 15 guys hanging out. But that's what it must be. They must have them. So that's the great question, though. You assume they'll attack by land because they know not to attack by sea.
Well, I'm just trying to... This whole exercise I'm trying to do is trying to find a way that... anybody can fight this incredible force that Daenerys has. And one of the things I was thinking is that you can't use the dragons really in King's Landing, or else this could be you could lose the city entirely, which Daenerys and Tyrion theoretically don't want to do. The
right,
flip side is that the flip side is that Cersei could threaten the city. Cersei could say, "Hey, you come anywhere near this city, I'm going to light it up with wildfire. All these innocent people die." Cersei, crazy Queen Cersei, could hold all the innocents, the littles, the small folk, hostage and say, "You do anything, you want this throne, you come anywhere near, I'm blowing it up good."
Well, I'm going back to what Jake said, because I think Jake is completely right here.
Okay.
Is that when Cersei threatens to go nuts, Jaime's going to realize, I've got another mad regent on my hand. And that's going to be a big deal for him to kill his sister.
If he didn't like the nickname Kingslayer, when he kills yet another, when he kills a Queen Slayer, is he going to like that nickname, or is it going to be King Queen Slayer?
Well, I think then he's just going to go on the road,
right?
You know, and go and find his old girlfriend, unless Tormund's already hitting that.
Oh no! Hurry, Jamie. Hurry, hurry, hurry. So
and now Mandatory is she's going to ship Cersei and the Night King, a.k.a. Fire and Ice.
Yeah, and I don't want to make this as a better call, Mandatory, mm-hmm. but your line of thinking was another thing I thought. Well, maybe Cersei needs allies. Hey, maybe she can say, you're on Greyjoy. Come join me.
Well, that's true.
Who else could join her? I'm trying to think.
At Secuum calls her Darth Cersei.
Oh, that's
also
great.
Said the Unsullied and the Dothraki could take the city, but that comment was a little while ago, and again, you have... You know, when you have Wildfire, you've just got an incredible card. I don't know if blowing up your own city, that's like one of those crazy comedies where someone holds a knife to their own throat. Don't come! Don't come or I'll kill them!
Okay, hey, I know our double L's are much more creative than I am, so if you can think of any way that Cersei or Euron or anybody can fight these dragons, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/doublepodcast. Give us some ideas, because those were the ones I could come up with.
And hey, this is not our last podcast of the season.
Great point, Catfish. What are we going to be doing?
We've got an action-packed podcast coming up. In previous seasons, some people have enjoyed particularly the episodes where we have taken chapters from the books and rewritten them from Joffrey's point of view. For those of you who aren't book readers, you'll be shocked to realize that the main character in the saga of Ice and Fire, King Joffrey, there's no point of views from point of view chapters for him. Those were left out of the book simply because he's such a powerful character, but we found them. We dug them out of George R. R. Martin's trash, and we read them. Now, this year, because he's so severely behind, what we're doing is we are going to take scenes from this season.
Oh, yeah.
And we are going to present them to you from Joffrey's point of view. And I believe we're also going to have a special Mr. Pycelle chapter.
Right, we're going to go back, R.I.P. Pycelle, to show him some respect. He had a great POV chapter in A Clash of Kings, so I'm going to read that. It really sheds a whole new light on this beacon, this pillar of wisdom in King's Landing. Love it, love it, love it.
It's amazing. Now, just one more response to you.
Oh, great, let's hear it.
About how they're going to have a hard time, Daenerys taking over.
Sure.
Our friend at Cal T. Moore says, Euron uses his BFC that he was going to give to Dany.
It's BFC. She will probably swipe left, I'm guessing, for the BFC. But you never know. She's very lonely now. She got rid of Dario, so...
No. He's going to give it to Cersei.
Oh, sorry.
The one that he offered Daenerys. Now he's going to give it to Cersei, who I think is probably done with all things sea now.
Oh no.
I think she's done.
That's sad. Well, let's get to our good buddy Jake, who gave us this great question about, hey, don't you think Jaime will kill his sister? And he had a question about somebody who, depending on her accessories, is either really hot or really, really, really old.
They're not mutually exclusive.
No, that's
yet in
not.
This case, they kind of are.
They kind of are. God bless her. Age is just a number, but that number may be triple digits when the necklace is off.
Boom.
So Jake had a question about, or a comment, I should say, a prediction about Melisandre.
What did he have to say about wild redhead?
He says, Melisandre headed south, plus the Brotherhood Without Banners headed north. Just putting it out there. And then Sarvesh also had a question about Melisandre. He says, does Melisandre ride to King's Landing to join with Cersei? Boy, that would be a great...
Whoa.
That would be a great pairing. He says, Cersei seems like the most Lord of the Light ruler ever. Love it, Sarvesh. Love it, Jake.
Wow.
So, we got two options from our double L's, Brotherhood Without Banners or Cersei. Do you like either of those, Catfish, or are you going to go off the board? What do you think?
Wow, I would love to see Melisandre become an advisor to Cersei. Wow, that would be powerful.
You know, she might be able to take off the necklace and hook up with Qyburn.
How about Frank and Gregor? Oh. Frank and Gregor come towards her and be like, "Rrr." She'll take off the necklace. It's like, "Oh, no, no."
Right. Well, what I thought Catfish is, he's like, "Oh, look at this sexy girl." Takes off his helmet. She takes off her necklace. He puts the helmet back on. Walks slowly out of the room. Well, I would definitely say that it could be the Brotherhood without banners. That seems more logical than Cersei. But the one person we know she's going to meet, if they follow up on that vision from back in season 3, Melisandre said she and Arya would meet again if, as I believe, Arya is headed to King's Landing to keep scratching names off her list. I assume some way that's how she's going to run into Melisandre. And so maybe Melisandre is headed to Cersei.
Hmm. Now, what do you... obviously, I criticized it from the character's point of view.
Right.
Wasn't criticizing the writing. I was saying that John's decision showed that he still wasn't a strong leader because he took a weak middle path. But clearly, it's more than just showing his character. They want to keep Melisandre around for something.
What do
you think Melisandre's use is at this point? Eventually an advisor to Daenerys, part of that group? She's the Red Witch,
right. The
in capital letters. And then it turns out that Essos is filthy with them.
Filthy with people who worship the Lord of Light.
But there's a lot of witches. There was a lot of witches there spreading the... We assume they're witches. Maybe they're just...
Right, those Red Priestesses.
Priestesses, right.
They appeared, and we saw many different variations. We saw one in Volantis. We saw two different ones show up there in Meereen. But what's interesting is none of those have stuck around. They all claim Daenerys is their savior, the way they're claiming her. The one who is promised, I believe one of the Red Priestesses in Meereen described Daenerys that way. But what's interesting is that none have, quote-unquote, joined the cause. We didn't see any in particular on those ships in the Armada. So maybe that is where Melisandre could end up. I tend not to think so, but it's just I don't have anything to go on.
It's just a mystery to me what her remaining function is.
Do you think she's ever going to do any of the magic she's done already? Meaning, will she birth another shadow demon? Will she bring anybody back to life? Will she just see something important in the flames? What any of those three that she'll repeat, Catfish? I tend not to think so.
It's funny that you bring that up because, you know, when we first met her, she seemed so powerful.
Yeah, too powerful.
Yeah. It was the kind of thing where it's like you thought, God, how can Stannis lose again because he's got this such powerful woman on her side? I mean, obviously bringing Jon back from death is powerful. But other than that, we haven't seen anything. I mean, if she had kind of continued to show that kind of power, I'm not sure that Sir Knuckles, Davos Seaworth, would have confronted her in any way. But she seems so strong, and then she's lost her power. Is that sort of the way it feels in the books to you, too?
It does. And, I said earlier we don't like talking about the books in any way.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out.
Well, I'm going to break my own rule, Catfish, on this and say there's yet another option of where Melisandre might end up. And this, listeners, this isn't a spoiler unless I happen to guess and get it right, and it's really based on the most minimal of information at all. But I wonder if a recently released The Winds of Winter preview chapter from George R. R. Martin doesn't have a small hint that maybe somehow Melisandre and Euron end up together.
Oh, interesting.
But that could be completely the books and not the show. So, and I could be reading it wrong, but there is some craziness going on. And I guess it's fun not to know. Huh? We have no idea.
Well, we do have there's a few options for what she could be doing that we got.
Let's hear it. Yeah.
Kyle T. Moore says she'll start selling age-defying jewelry.
Boy, that would go over so well. That would go over great, Kyle.
He also said, now she's going to have to do some travel for this. Somebody needs to take over the oysters, clams, and cockles cart, and she'd be perfect for that.
Boy, if you saw a lovely lady like that selling oysters, clams, and cockles, I don't even like oysters, but I might go, okay, give me one. Give me a cockle.
Well, oysters, clams, and cockles, or removing the necklace?
No, keep it, please. Hopefully, whether you're a show watcher only, somebody who does both, I hope you can look forward to not knowing and knowing that, boy, we will not find out. I bet we probably won't even find out in this shortened seventh season until even maybe the third episode. We'll see.
You know, I really feel like we lost Sir Fredzone, Jorah. And I assume we'll see him again, but I don't think it's going to matter that much. I mean, you know, this disease that he has, it doesn't seem like it's important for this show that someone find a cure for it.
Do you...
It's more just like, just go away while you get rock hard. I don't want to see you hard again. Daenerys says, I'm tired of seeing you hard.
Okay, let's only think of the one way you can think of I don't want to see you hard again from Daenerys to Jorah, because the other way is very disturbing. Catfish, I've heard some people on Twitter and online say things like, wouldn't it be great for Jorah? He's like, okay, I'm going to die of grayscale. I'm going to go back to my family's house on Bear Island and see, make sure that it's being run well. And then he sees Triple L, Little Lady Lyanna Mormont, and he's like, oh, God. Okay, it's fine. They don't need me.
Oh, man, no kidding. Oh, our old friend Matt Foster at Fat Monster says,
hey,
you know, there was someone who was on the show who was cured from a stone scale.
Grayscale, yeah.
Yeah, grayscale. Yeah, Stannis' daughter.
Shireen, yes.
Yeah. Cured.
Right, but they didn't even know how they cured her. They tried so many things and maybe just it worked. I almost feel like if you send somebody off in search of a cure, is it weird if they don't find it and it's just like, well, didn't find it, I'm dying. Or do they need to find the cure or else it makes no sense?
I think it's almost that maybe he won't find the cure, but we'll see him one more time just in a rock suit or something. He'll be like the rock monster from Galaxy Quest.
Or what if he goes, I couldn't find a cure, Khaleesi. So instead, I'm just going to talk trash to Dario. Hey, Dario, remember all those times you said I would never ride the dragon? Well, you're not riding it either, asshole.
Now, see, you missed the joke there because, I got it too. It was, the joke was she got cured by Melisandre, Stannis' daughter.
Oh. Oh, sorry. Okay.
You just add fire. Cured.
You're saying Shireen isn't worried about that grayscale anymore.
No, she doesn't have that problem anymore, does she?
No. Tough. All right, Catfish. I'm going to go to another thing I've heard some people snipe about online. And that is...
Oh, those snipers.
With the death of the Boltons.
Okay.
The Baratheons.
Uh-huh.
Outside of Lady Olenna, the Tyrells. The wildlings are pretty much all gone. The slavers in Slaver's Bay. Whoops, excuse me, Bay of Dragons. They're gone. So all these plots that we've been following all these years, did they really just amount to a hill of beans? And does that upset you as somebody who's followed this story for so long? Were they just a stalling tactic to delay Daenerys fighting the Lannisters, fighting possibly a northern group? Or do you not consider them kind of the waste of time and you think, oh, this was great, I like it better? You would characterize it as the show kind of getting back to its core, and this is the way the story should always go. What do you think? Was all these side stories, were they a waste of time, or is it just kind of the natural progression, and at the end it was always going to have to close in? Because I think you can think about it either way, but I've heard some people be like, well, gee, what was the point of Slaver's Bay? What was the point of the Tyrells if they were just going to mount to a hill of beans?
I mean, I guess if you want to say everybody who dies while they were amidst this struggle was pointless until we get to the end, then you'd be happy with one book or maybe two books. I mean, I have been the one that's been, I think, very critical with the subplots that were added to the books, but I haven't had a problem with the show except for, as I've said repeatedly, Daenerys took a really long time to learn her lesson.
Okay.
The Boltons had two things to do. One, in the end, they sort of sharpened Jon. He needed to sharpen himself against them.
Right.
And number two, they gave us an amazing character to hate. How could you say I would rather...
Fat Walda?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no.
No. I said character we hate, not character we ate.
Boom. Who let the dogs out?
I've enjoyed the side trips.
Perfect. Okay.
Except for some of the stuff that seemed like a stalling tactic. I don't mind, you know, people bubble up, they get pushed down. As long as it's not pointless, then I'm fine with it.
I've kind of come to that thought process too. One thing, even all these days after the season finale, I've been thinking about, oh man, Marjorie's such a good character. She's such a great character. Boy, they never really used Ser Loras to all the ways they could have used him. But I guess it goes back to the catchphrase on the poster in season one. when you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. And so the Tyrells, they did play. If you go back to season one, Loras is trying to talk Renly into joining this Game of Thrones. You see Margaery playing the Game of Thrones. I don't want to be a queen. I want to be the queen. So they played. They died. As tough as it is to lose such a great actress, such a great character, I guess it makes sense. And I do feel that the destination may have gone up in a flash of light and smoke, but I did think the journey was fine with those characters.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not like Harry Potter wandering out in the woods for a while. Or I'm thinking of that the second book of that series where a guy also wandered with K'voth. He also wandered around in the woods for a while.
That's the great King Killer Chronicles. It's by Patrick Rothfuss, that book series. The first book, The Name of the Wind, is one of the best fantasy books you could read. Yet the second book, some people really liked it. The Wise Man's Fear is the name of the second book in that series. But you and I both agree on that one. Ooh, what happened there?
Yeah, well, and there is another one. There's another well-known book series.
Okay.
It's Joe Abercrombie. It's the First Law trilogy, which I loved for the most part. However, I will say there's one of those books. They leave one place, a whole bunch of them. They go to take this long journey to go somewhere to find something.
Right.
And then I'm not kidding you when I tell you when they get there, they find out it was hidden back where they started from.
Oh, ouch. You know, I didn't even like the first book in that series. I was tough on it.
Well, I was mostly tough with that series because people started off in a great place as far as being flawed characters. Mm-hmm. They all grew, they learned, and then the last, like, 20 pages of the last book, they all returned to the characters they were at the beginning of the book. I know several people who threw that book down in disgust.
Oh, no, that's tough. Okay, so Catfish, are you ready to go up north where it's cold and wintry?
Yes,
and
the
wind is blowing.
We actually have a question about the north.
Let's hear it.
The question is from Bertuzzi Punch, and he asks, is Sansa going to marry Jon?
Back when they started hugging, when they first reunited, back in, I believe, the third episode of this season, the fourth episode of this season, I was like, I'm on Team Jansa. That's so great. Oh, that's so sweet. And now that we find out that they're, quote-unquote, just cousins, not half-siblings, it seems less creepy.
And they're kissing cousins. And as someone pointed out, I don't know where I saw this, somehow he managed to kiss her on the forehead. Although when you look at them in pictures in real life, she is taller than he is.
He might have been standing on her feet. He's like, I'm going to kiss. We have to trust each other. Now let me stand on your feet. I think they could go that way if they hadn't foreshadowed so much that there's going to be some arguments amongst them. And so, Catfish, you were like, I can't see Sansa trusting Littlefinger after all she's been through. I can't take a disagreement between Jon and Sansa. But I'm actually going to go to your point, Catfish, about the battle in the middle, the battle between the North and the Lannisters. What if Jon, who's seen the White Walker, he has seen the Night King, and he's like, we got to take all these forces and we got to march to the wall. And Sansa and Littlefinger are like, you know, we still have a huge threat of the Lannisters to our south. The Knights of the Vale belong to me. We got to march south. And what if that could be one of the first of many political disagreements they could have that could really start pulling them away? Sansa has not seen the White Walker. She hasn't seen the army of zombies. She has not seen this stuff. She would be afraid of Cersei. Cersei believes she was responsible in some ways for King Joffrey's death. And so if Littlefinger just whispers to her, you know, Cersei's weak now, she's hated by many people, and she wants you dead, we should go and take care of her now. Why wouldn't Sansa kind of understand that logic and say, Jon, you want to march them to the wall? That's a giant wall. We're fine. Let's go south. And so I could see that be a way that they could argue with each other. Now, this is just me hypothesizing, but sure.
Well, it's interesting because I just naturally assumed, of course, because of the way the show has to work, I have always assumed that first south of the wall is going to be united by, you know, somebody kicking everybody else's ass. And then that combined army goes north of the wall. So if Jon says, no, we got to fight the White Walkers, that would make sense. But I think that he might use the same excuse as before.
What do you mean?
Well, he might say, we don't have enough people.
Oh, there you go. That's totally true.
So he might, they might have to go south to fight. I don't know. That would be the one thing that would split them up, but I still don't think... I can't believe that Sansa is going to be manipulated by Littlefinger, but I think she could come to that... She could come to that realization, like, let's go south and fight these people. I'm not even sure where her head's at. Who else do you think? She just wanted Ramsay to die hard. You know, there was no talk about what's next, of course, because they had just this fight to go to. So I suppose that'll be what happens next season is, okay, what next?
Well, Catfish, I love that you said, I don't know where Sansa's head is at, because we had this great feedback from Payne of Podrick, who's at KimAttack18 on Twitter. And they wrote, they said, you know, recall Littlefinger told Cersei in season 5 that he would not rest until the lion flies over Winterfell. And Payne of Podrick wrote, he's not done. And so this goes into one of those things. If you remember back to season 5, he was like, let's have Stannis and the Bolton's army fight. Then I'll bring the army up the Vale back there and we'll take over the things. And he goes, I'll do this if you name me Warden of the North. And one of the things I believe Cersei said it, she goes, good, I want Sansa Stark's head on a pike, because once again, she thinks Sansa was in some ways responsible for King Joffrey's death. And so
mostly because Littlefinger spirited her away, so she was nowhere to be found after Joffrey died.
And so could Littlefinger, if he's given the hand too much when he goes in for his smooches, could he suddenly say, you know what? Your mom treated me like dirt, even though I was crazy about her. Now you're treating me like dirt. I want to be King of King's Landing. So if I take your head, ooh, maybe Cersei offers him, says, hey, I'll make you king. You can marry me and you can be, technically, I guess he'd be a prince if he married Queen Cersei. Maybe that's how he gets the Iron Throne. I'm just trying to, obviously these may not make too much sense, but.
Okay, so this kind of leads us to something we were talking about before. If he gets rejected by Sansa, he could say, okay, fine, I will go join Cersei. And then that group could be with Cersei, even though those houses are together. I mean, it would be surprising if Robb and Arryn would have turned his back on the Starks.
No, it wouldn't make any sense. But once again, I'm just trying to – the wheels are spinning in my head. And so I'm trying to figure out how Littlefinger, which people are asking about. We had questions from Sarvesh. How is Littlefinger – you know, his move, as we've already seen, is to drive a wedge between Sansa and Jon. And if he can't do that, he has a goal. He's going for it. He's got to find a way. So I'm just throwing out crazy things. Now, our good buddy Quentin.
Yes.
Who is – Uncle Q, he heard you attacking Jon Snow, Catfish.
Rightfully.
Yeah, probably in some ways, but he wanted to defend Jon Snow. So he wrote this great post on Facebook. So I want you to read this, Catfish, and see if he's going to switch your mind to be pro Double M Mopey Moberson Jon Snow.
Well, before I answer that, I'm going to say this is a very well-written and reasoned post.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you.
He says, all right, I'll defend Jon a piece here. Killing Melisandre after she brought him back to life is such a bad look, even for Double M.
Double M?
Mopey Moberson. But he had to do something to keep Sir Knuckles, that's Davos, as a trusted advisor, so he goes middle route. Appeases Davos, keeps Melly's rockin' bot alive, win-win. He says, also agrees with John that there was nothing to forgive for Lord Glover. Glover's reasons for not helping John and Sansa in episode 7 were solid. It continues John's approach to move forward in the best way possible without keeping grudges from the past. He says, grudge with Sir Alistair, make him first ranger. Grudge with Wildlings, save them, become allies, get a new best friend in Tormund. Grudge with Northern Houses, didn't help him fight Ramsay, now we're good, let's move on. Is this always wise?
No.
Not when Sir Alistair leads men to stab him. But it keeps that old Triple S, Silly Stark spirit alive and well.
Oh.
May it one day pay off. So in the future we might have grudge with White Walkers? Let him run the ski resort north of the wall. The fermented goat's milk is always cold and the ski slopes never melt at White Walker Mountain. No dragon glass allowed.
Ooh.
Sending love to you guys and the great King Joffrey. Now,
you were right, Kev. This is a wonderful written piece of feedback. Thank you so much at the Uncle Q on Twitter.
I would like to think that our podcast is like this. First, it's informative and thoughtful, and then he goes for the jokes. So this is my kind of comment. I thought that what you said immediately following the last episode when we did the podcast was right about the way he should have handled Lord Glover. And that is, fine, I understand what you did, but now you got to stand beside me.
Right, you got to prove your worth. You can make it up to us, to the cause, if you get in there and fight.
You can't say that when you're loyal to a house.
Yeah.
Remember, I keep going back to this reasoning because although it seems silly to us, it perfectly shows the way things are in this world. They're out there. Sir Edmure is outside the castle.
Let me in.
Let him in, even though he's been captive for years and years. And he tells them immediately, drop down your arms, and they drop down your arms. So even though in a modern world we would be like, okay, this is foolish, in this world you always follow the people you have fealty to. So I would say that John would have reason to actually kill this dude.
Whoa.
So the fact is, not killing him is mercy, but forgiving him is beyond the pale in this world. That's my feeling.
Right. How about this? It's not just that you didn't come and fight with us, Lord Glover. You really talk some smack. F you.
Yeah, right. 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 You know what I would say? He at least deserves a strong tongue lashing from Liliana.
Right. Lord Glover, you constantly insulted my dead brother. F you. Taste steel, jerk.
Yeah, it just goes to show that John does not have the... Even righteous Ned Stark, whose silly ideas, notions of honor led him to be Ned's head on a pike, would have done something different than this.
Love it, love it, love it. Hey, let's continue on with Jon Snow, Jon Stark. Ooh, or is he? And that is...
Well, we know he's not.
Oh, okay, good. I still like saying, or is he?
Okay, go
keep,
ahead.
Keep the mystery alive. But, Catfish, one thing that we missed, and I caught it when I was able to finally watch the episode a second time, is that in the Tower of Joycey, if you watch Lyanna, and we talk about the volume dropping out when Lyanna Stark, Ned's younger sister, is talking to him in the Tower of Joy there, in the Brand vision, Weirwood Tree vision, the audio drops out, but you can kind of sort of hear, and people who've done audio tests and they've gone in, and you can see that one of the things she begins to say before the audio totally drops is, his name is. She's referring to this baby that just got handed to Ned, and she's like, his name is dot, dot, dot. And so many people think, well, obviously, she didn't say his name is Jon Snow. He was born in the South, so many people think, at the very least, he should have been a sand instead of a snow. But people say she wouldn't have said John. And George R. R. Martin has said that Ned named the baby John. And so people are wondering, would Lyanna, if she was in love with Rhaegar Targaryen, if she hadn't been kidnapped and raped, but if she was in love with him, what name would she have given him? Probably a type of Targaryen-esque name, like the name Jaehaerys or Aemon. And so does it matter to you, number one? Do you care that his name really may not be Jon Snow? It may be Aemon Targaryen, you know, our second in the series after Aemon Targaryen, Maester Aemon at the Wall, or Jaehaerys Targaryen. What do you think? Do you care, number one, that his name may not be John? And if so, what do you think? What would you want it to be?
Well, first of all, I agree with Mandatory, and her suggestion was, Bran, stand a little closer. Can you get a little closer?
Can Bran rewind the tape?
Change things? Can he go back again and see a vision all over again?
Well, he did. He went back to the exact same moment earlier where he was with the Three-Eyed Raven and he saw his father start to run up the stairs. He went back to that exact same
point. So he should just go back again.
Just keep going and keep getting closer and closer, like really creepy suddenly.
Right? Until he can finally, because before he called out and Ned turned around, I wanted to stand right next to Ned's shoulder and go, Dad.
Right. What if he's like, darn it, I didn't hear that.
Go to King's Landing.
Well, no, I was going to say, he's like, okay, I got to get closer. And so dying, you know, just giving childbirth, dying in childbirth, Lyanna Stark leans in and she's like, Ned, his name is. And then Bran goes, John.
perfect. It's a perfect circle, just like how Hodor got changed to Hodor.
Bran is giving everybody names.
I love it. I will say this. John, my middle name is John. I think John's a cool name.
Okay.
But it's not as cool as Jaehaerys. That name is cool. A person with Jaehaerys has got to have, like, first of all, they have very cool hair. John's got very cool hair. He's got more Jaehaerys hair than John hair. But
you think Ygritte's going to come back from the grave and go, "You know nothing, Jaehaerys Targaryen." That's too long. I'll just call you Jon Snow. Well, a lot of people are tied up in this fact that it turns out he may have been given a different name by his mother, and maybe she talked about that with Rhaegar.
Well, let's be clear about this.
Yeah.
If you're trying to hide the fact that he's a Targaryen, you definitely don't name him Jaehaerys or Aemon, okay? That's a dead giveaway, and by dead I mean he would have been dead.
Right. Robert's wrath would have cut him down.
There was a little bit of controversy this week.
Yeah.
You know, because it wasn't, they didn't spell it out in big bold letters who John's father was.
Right.
And some people thought that it might have been the Mad King himself. Now, I believe if you want to get into a discussion of whether he's a bastard or not a bastard, you should listen to the wrap up we did at the show 10, which you went into it in great detail and explained a lot to me. But as far as who's his actual father, is HBO cleared it up by sending out this beautiful, it kind of looks like a clock and everybody's face is on it, and it shows who's related to who parented who, and they made it very clear that John's father is not the Mad King, but is indeed...
It's not King Robert. Some people thought, is King Robert his father? She was engaged to him. And then some people, I never actually saw it myself, but I heard people saying, yeah, some people said, wait, is Ned his father? No, Ned didn't practice sibling incest like so many families did.
Oh, boy. So you know what? Perhaps they should have cleared that up. Again, I have to confess.
Yeah.
I probably would have been confused about them myself if I had not thought for years, you know, that this theory was floating around about John's parentage. The way that was set up, I would have been like, okay, so that's his father's sister, but what happened? You know, I mean, I know that this was a big deal in the war, but that's a long time ago that it was talked about.
And the show keeps sprinkling it in. It's never like they've had an info dump. They haven't had sex position, which said, she did this, she did this, she did this.
Yeah.
You know, you have that little scene with Bran and Osha in episode 10 of season 1, which kind of spells some things out pretty well. To be honest, the show kept mentioning the name Rhaegar without ever explaining who he was back in season 1, and then they would call him the Mad King, so I think it would be quite easy for people to think, oh, is Rhaegar the Mad King? Wait, no, who's Aerys? And so...
You know, I have missed a lot of sex position on this show. They pretty much did it the first two seasons and then stopped doing it. I wouldn't mind a little lady-on-lady action while someone in the foreground explains this whole situation.
Right. What if the children of the forest are like, so you want to know how the White Walkers were created? All right, Leaf, take off that moss.
I'll show you how children of the forest are made.
Okay. All right. So let's look. We got to head south.
Okay. Let's do it.
Because our good buddy at Patman23 on Twitter.
Oh, love him.
Patman, he says he assumes that Sam comes out of the library. Gilly and baby Sam will have been taken by his father, Randall Tarly, for stealing that damn sword. And he called it a bad plan. When is Papa Tarly, who said, you'll never hold this sword, when they had dinner together, when is he ever going to say, you know, the mantles looked a little empty, and Sam and Gilly and the baby just suddenly disappeared. Well, everything's fine.
Okay. I wonder where they're going. Gee, if only Samwell had told me exactly where he wanted to go.
Multiple times. He had sent a letter even before he showed up telling me where he wanted to go, but now I'm lost.
I'll
go north.
Would it be amazing if the show... like Sam,
yeah,
just completely forgot about Gilly and little Sam, or Triple S.
Triple S.
Slightly smaller Sam.
Oh, no, poor slightly smaller Sam. So I would think the show, God bless it, maybe you don't like how they wrap up loose ends. Osha and Rickon are out there as a loose end. Hey, welcome back. You're dead. Hey, Uncle Benjen's a loose thread out there. Hey, come here's Uncle Benjen. Bran, I'm dropping you off miles. I'm taking the horse, walk. So I definitely think they're not going to allow Papa Tarly to just be a loose end, but yeah, it does seem very strange.
What do you think is going to happen with that sword, though? Tell us more about the sword.
Well, the sword, as we were told, is Valyrian steel, and that's good for one thing and one thing only.
Getting the ladies?
Right. Valyrian steel swords are good for killing the White Walkers. Sam knows it.
Right.
John knows it. We've got to get more Valyrian swords into the hands of people who are going to fight the White Walkers. Sam's dad is not getting that sword back. I don't know how, but it's got to end up north. That's the only thing that makes sense. So we shall see.
All right.
Catfish, you got some great feedback, some people who were excited to win prizes. What did people say on Twitter?
All right, well, let's talk about the people who won prizes. And then some people mentioned some. We're going to whip around and talk about some characters.
Okay.
First of all, Stephanie Persephone, who won? Yeah. Stephanie Persephone says, I got to find it here. She says, it's my greatest accomplishment to date.
Oh, yeah. There are so many. A lot of times you should take your diploma off the wall and put up these Wind of Wizard.
You should. You should. And speaking of something
Double W.
Yeah. Weirwood Tracy Tracy2EZ says, OMG, OMG, I won. Thanks. And then she put up a little GIF for the Mr. Robot. And then I mistakenly, when I replied to her, may have spoiled some of the season.
Catfish.
So don't pay any attention to my response.
Shameful.
We did have one comment was sort of interesting,
yeah,
and sort of spine tingling and maybe not a positive way at the same time.
Uh-oh.
Our buddy Ad Heath actor, who's been on the show.
Yeah, great. Heath, who I believe is right now in one of our favorite cities, Catfish, Prague, getting married. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love Prague. Make sure to go to that five-story dance club. Oh, you didn't go. Oh.
I didn't go. Son of a gun.
It was so good.
Why did you go to that dance? Why was I tired?
I think you were tired.
We had done a walking tour of Prague,
yeah,
and then we had done a kind of a pub crawl,
right,
of Prague.
And what happened was, even though we were on the week, we were on kind of like the adults pub crawl. It wasn't like the crazy young kids. The last thing was actually
there were some college. There were kids. There were college kids with us.
But I think the youngest kid was the kid leading the tour.
Oh, that's right.
This is my first tour. I'm not supposed to drink. And they just started drowning in drinks. It was great. The last part of that tour was going to this five-story club you got entrance to, you know, VIP. They took you past the line. And each floor had a different decor and was playing different kinds of music. It was very cool.
It was right by the bridge, right? The famous bridge in Prague.
Heath, go to that with your new lady. He did say,
yeah,
I was sleeping while listening to the Joffrey podcast, and in my dream we were in a convertible doing pod with CJGman67 parents at Fit and Trim.
So, in other words, his parents were sitting between you and I in the convertible. This is a very disturbing dream.
Wow. That's something. I've never dreamed about doing a podcast, although I've had some nightmarish moments on these podcasts.
I was going to say, for including us in your creepy dream, shame, Heath. Shame.
Oh, so good. And we had our friend at Mike Kelly said, kudos for another Joff-tastic season. I give this season 5 stars.
5 stars.
So many great win rewards. Michael Kelly.
Oh,
he had to drop it in one more time.
I know.
Good. Hopefully you are well remunerated, Michael Kelly.
Yeah, say that again. You've earned your pay there, buddy. Wyndham has given us these kind of prizes, but they have not paid, so we should stop dropping their names so much. But I am going to say this. Part of the Wyndham hotel chains is this hotel chain known as Days Inn. And when I was a little kid, I lived in Savannah for a bit. And Savannah, beautiful city to visit, the old squares, the beach, there's so much things. But what you know, because it is a still small town, they try to take pride in everything. And one of the things they would say is, Days Inn was started here in Savannah. And you're like, okay, great. Okay, you know, you're proud of this motel chain being started here. Good work, Savannah.
Way to finally take care of business, Savannah.
Hey, Catfish, are you ready to get into our popular Double B section?
Double B?
Book bitchin'.
Oh, yeah, good. I'm going to rest.
No. We're going to have a double B book bitchin' section this
quadruple
time.
Quadruple B.
That's right. We're going to do book bitchin' about the show. Then we're going to do book bitchin' about the books. This will be great.
Wow, okay. All right, I'll pay attention during the show part.
Now, Catfish, you and I, in one of our podcasts from last season, season 5, we talked about, okay, they're going to be off the books now. And you were like, oh, thank God, thank God. I trust the showrunners to handle this story and take us to the end more than I trust George R. R. Martin. And I had the exact flip side. I was like, the showrunners are good, they're fine, but I trust George R. R. Martin more. Now, as we know, I loved the episode The Door. I thought that was great. I love these final two episodes. But there were things that I just tend to think George R. R. Martin would do better. And so I'm going to talk about...
You mean if he ever did them?
Well, let's talk about it right now. At the end of season 5, Arya Stark, a.k.a. No One Wannabe, was told to kill this insurer in Braavos with her oysters, clams, and cockles. She sees Ser Meron Trant, somebody who's on her list, and so she stops being no one, and she goes and kills Meron Trant. It's not just that she kills this evil Meron Trant, it's how she kills him. She goes to Tarantino on him. And if you watch that show and the kind of grotesque way she kills Meron Trant, and then if you watch the after the episode where the showrunners talk, they're like, oh man, we should be very worried for Arya going down this dark path, killing Meron Trant. So, okay, that's how they leave us in season 5. Then season 6 begins, and Arya's main story through the bulk of the season is Arya's like, oh, you know what? Lady Crane, why should I kill this actress, Lady Crane? She's a good person. I shouldn't kill her. She doesn't deserve to die just because this other actress is jealous. And so Arya's like, okay, I'm not going to kill Lady Crane. I'm not no one. I'm Arya Stark. So I think the impression you're supposed to get is, okay, we don't have to worry about Arya. She was going down a dark path, but she remembers who she is. She's not going to kill a quote-unquote innocent woman like Lady Crane, the actress. And so she's good. And so you're like, all right, Arya's back. Arya's good. Then in this episode, episode 10, just a couple episodes later, she kills Walder Frey. She feeds him his sons in a pie. She slits his throat. And then as you said in the episode, they're like, you were like, boy, they held on Arya smiling as Walder Frey died for a real long time. And sure enough, if you watch the after the episode, the showrunners are like, oh boy, ooh, what do you think? We should be worried for Arya's soul, the way she's taking such pleasure and glee in this terrible death. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's exactly how we were supposed to feel at the end of season 5. Then you gave us this thing where we shouldn't be worried about her. Now you're suddenly telling us we should be worried about Arya again. I called it whiplash characterization that the showrunners have done. I'm not going to beat them up too much, but doesn't it feel that way? Doesn't it feel that way to you that somehow, how are we supposed to feel about it?
I'm surprised that the showrunners feel that way, because that's not the way I feel having watched the season.
I think a lot of people could feel your way, Catfish, but if you watch that inside the episode, they say it again, the same thing they said at the end of season 5, episode 10. They're like, oh, Arya's taking, you know, the idea that Arya's taking such joy in this brutal, vicious revenge, we should feel worried for her. And it's kind of like,
I think it's darker to be a murder for hire than murdering people that you feel justified in murdering. That seems darker. That seems more amoral to me.
What I would say is, I believe what they're trying to get at is, yes, Ned believed the person who gives the Senate should swing the sword, but Ned Stark wouldn't torture people the way Ser Meron and Walder Frey and theoretically those Frey sons, Arya, actually tortured. And so I think they're trying to make us think about how revenge can be all-consuming, one of these things that the book really does get out. But I don't find, personally, for all the book's fault, I don't find this kind of zigzag character motivation. And so that's my first book bitching for this.
And you had some support on that. Some people made some comments about Arya.
Yeah, what'd they say?
Well, Holly said she's got the same moral compass as Dexter Morgan.
Oh, the great Showtime show Dexter. And yeah. I loved your response to that, Catfish.
I said, I just hope that the last episode of Game of Thrones isn't as horrific as the last episode of Dexter.
Spoiler alert, Arya becomes a lumberjack.
Holly reminded me, it wasn't just the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
It was the entire last season. I would say it was the last couple seasons.
Oh, yeah.
Michael says, I wouldn't say she's all the way there. She's something of a double P.
Double P.
Part psycho.
Hey, that's all you need is a part psycho.
Bertuzzi Punch says, Arya kills Jaime and uses his face to kill Cersei. How about that? I don't think
we're, I like that. I like that a lot.
But I don't think we're going to get out of the real justice, the real hard justice is going to be the actual Jaime killing Cersei. I think we're going to see that.
Okay.
Christine says she's a double G.
Double G.
Girl with goals, and she's going for it. Doesn't make her a bad person. Being good and honorable doesn't get you very far in the Game of Thrones world. Just ask her daddy. And that's exactly how I feel about the situation.
Okay. Well, then, at the very least, if that's what they're going for, I wish the showrunners would stop kind of saying the opposite.
I agree that what they just said was disturbing. If they're going to take her into a dark area. Tori Hunter.
Yeah, Mondo Tori.
Mondo Tori. Yeah, she said, quoting the High Sparrow, rest in peace, the God's justice is fierce, but also fair. Bam. There it was, fair.
Okay, well, I think if I hadn't seen these things, and if they hadn't stayed on Arya's face so long, and you commented in episode 10, they stayed on her smiling face.
And remember, I said I thought that was like an editing mistake because it just held on it for so long. But apparently now you're telling me the showrunners are using this to show that she's gone nuts.
Or she just enjoys it too much. I'm still unsure.
But the Geek Girl Soup reminds us, though, that dreams can come true because Arya is the assassin she always wanted to be.
Hey, good work, Arya. Well, I'm not sure, to be honest, if you go back to season one, Arya was so much like, I want to be an assassin, so much as she kind of wanted to be a knight. She wanted to ride horses. She wanted to shoot arrows. She wanted to...
Yeah, well, same. Now, Tia Cookie wants to know, did Arya cheat the system, or is she no one after all and tricksy as hell? That is the thing that is confusing.
That is a good one.
When we talked about it at the time, when she just sort of she walked away from Jockin, she peaced out on Jockin, and he was okay with it. It was like, it does feel weird. She basically got the training. It's pretty much like the Navy put her through college, and then she said, "No thanks, Navy. I'm not going to enlist."
Right, but I am going to still run a naval warship.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so that was me kind of taking a little out on the show. And so now I feel for equal time in Double B.
Okay, do it.
Let's get to some book bitching about the actual books. And that is that George R. R. Martin and the showrunners, they've all said, you know what, things are so different now. The show's not going to spoil the books. The show's not going to spoil The Winds of Winter. And that is hogwash, I feel like. That is complete hogwash. And what I would say is the biggest one, now maybe you could say many people suspected it was going to happen, but the show told us that Jon Snow was coming back from the dead. The last time we saw him in the books, he had been stabbed at Castle Black. He was dead. We all may have suspected it, but that has been spoiled. There's no way he's not coming back from the dead in The Winds of Winter. And I could go on and on. But the books have been spoiled. There are certain storylines in the books have been spoiled. People say, yes, it may travel a different route to get there. Jon may be resurrected in a slightly different way in the books than he is in the show. But to sell this bill of goods that the show wasn't going to spoil the books is preposterous, and the only reason why it's being spoiled is because God bless George R. R. Martin. He spent so much time, and it's his prerogative, it's his life, but he spent so much time writing other things, like this book that we've got right in front of us, this encyclopedia-type book called The World of Ice and Fire, The Untold History of Westeros and the Game of Thrones. He said things in a conference that Pat Mann attended where he's like, oh, I was writing that, and I had 20,000 words I still had to cut because I had written so much for the book. And it's like, well, if maybe you hadn't spent time writing those 20,000 extra words that you ended up cutting, there's a small chance that the sixth book would have been out before the sixth season. And so, sadly, George Martin has no one to blame but himself.
Well, and let's not forget that for not just the first year, but maybe the second year and maybe the third, George R. R. Martin was still claiming that he was going to finish the series of books before the television show was going to end.
Right. He believed that perhaps, and the show did kind of rewrite some of his stuff, those fourth and fifth books, there's so many storylines that the show just cut that if they had done, to be honest, we wouldn't be where we are now in the show. If the show had stayed as faithful as that first season was, I don't believe this last season would have truly been anything other than more of the fourth and fifth.
Right.
Books.
But then more than just one person or a few people would have been complaining about quote unquote stalling tactics.
Oh, yeah.
This is what frustrated me about the books is throwing in a bunch of Double B.
Double B.
Book bullshit.
Hey, now, there it goes.
There it goes. The other thing is, it was interesting, somebody linked to it. There was a panel where George R. R. Martin was talking with Stephen King.
Right. It was at his theater there in New Mexico. It was great. Two great authors who I love both their works. I've loved a lot of Stephen King's books. I loved The Stand is one of my favorite books of all time. It I found so scary. And certainly I love George R. R. Martin's books, but they have completely different writing styles,
you know,
don't
what? I've thought this for a while, and it goes along with my feelings about all the extra things thrown into the books.
Yeah.
My honest feeling is that when George R. R. Martin thinks about it, obviously he knows what the end game is, but when he thinks about all the things he's got to wrap up and to get there, I think he's just like, oh, he doesn't. I think he thinks of it as a burden rather than like, I can't wait to get all this done and flesh all this out. I really honestly think that when he thinks about writing the books, that it is a burden on his mind to tie all these pieces together.
That's sad if that's true. That this poor guy, he's created this great thing that he obviously cares about so much. The world has grown to care about it. And now the thing that theoretically he has always loved doing his whole life, writing, is causing him, you know, grief. But I tend to think you might be true on most of that, Catfish, that the joy of writing, it doesn't always come alive. I think when the joy of writing, that's how you get 20,000 extra words for
right,
this book.
Exactly, right? I mean, when he does this kind of thing, and when he was writing episodes for the show, I think he thinks, oh, God, this is something new. It's different. I can piece things together rather than having to tie together intricate storylines. So the fact is he hasn't stopped writing.
Correct.
He's just not spending all of his time writing the rest of this series.
No, that's completely true. All right, Catfish, let's give away our awesome prize for the season.
Right.
This is from John Oliver's great HBO show, Last Week Tonight. He put out these hilarious hats. And remind everybody what the hat says, Catfish.
It says, Make Donald Drumpf Again.
And this is why, the what does Drumpf HBO mean, hat? Catfish?
Drumpf, remind everybody. Drumpf is Donald Trump's name from the old country. They used to be Drumpf. And so they changed it over. I don't know. You know, a lot of people's names sort of got Americanized.
Yeah.
My last name is German.
Oh, it is?
And when we came to this country, we had an extra N at the end. We were German. So sort of Americanized a little bit. So Drumpf got turned into Trump. So now we're going to pick the name.
All right,
and
let's
the
mix
last
it
thing
up.
We'll have is we got one more thing to do as always.
Yep.
Okay, and this will go to.
Let's hear it.
Maester David from Facebook.
Maester David.
Maester David.
You know what, Catfish?
Yeah.
I'll edit this out if that isn't true. But I think that's Grumpy Gobert.
Is it?
I think it is.
All right, so the one last thing we have to do is our Joffrey of the Week. And my Joffrey is going to be from the people that have commented today.
Well, we had great comments. I think they're all great. It's impossible for me to figure out who you're talking about. Who could it be?
All right, well, I'm giving it up once again to BT Mac 11.
Oh, yeah.
That's Jack, who said he had money on Pycelle and Gregor getting some ass in the finale.
Oh.
Oh, that is so good. How is it Joffrey like? Because just like Joffrey, BT Mac is always concerned about other people's needs being met.
Okay, I like that. Catfish, everybody knows I love His Grace King Joffrey more than life itself. But because a certain character on the show passed away, who I have been fondly recreating in my mind ever since we first met him, Grandmaster Pycelle, this week I'm going to do something truly blasphemous and not give a Joffrey of the Week. I'm going to give a Grandmaster Pycelle of the Week.
Oh, wow. And so I can't wait to hear how this person exhibits Pycelle's tendencies.
It's not just one person. In fact, it might be an entire country.
Wow. Okay.
So, Catfish, what is coming up in just a couple of weeks down in Rio? The Olympics. And
oh, yeah. They're pulling bodies out of the water near where people are going to play volleyball.
Now, Catfish, that is a horrific story. Mine is much more lighthearted.
Okay.
And that is, did you see that when people were getting off at the airport, they were being greeted with banners that said, They aren't safe. And those banners were being held by Rio de Janeiro and Brazil police officers and firefighters.
Great.
Now, why would a firefighter hold up a sign that says you're not safe?
Well, because they want more money and they're on
strike.
That's
right. They say they're not getting paid. And who is the king of not paying people? Maester Picel. Oh,
so beautifully tied together.
His motto, we do not pay. House Picel. Love it. So they are my
Picel
of the week. Oh, love it, love it, love it. All right, everybody, we are going to have that special episode where we read the Maester Picel chapter from A Clash of Kings, and we have some of the non-boring scenes of this season. It's going to be great. So it's going to be coming out in a couple of weeks once I'm back from the great state of Canada. And until next time, you'll hear us on
the